Hello and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that your brain can predict the future. Researchers at Stanford University have discovered that the part of the brain associated with reward becomes active when it knows something will be successful. And researchers came to this conclusion with the help of brain scanning technology. To test a brain or a person's ability to forecast, researchers recruited 30 volunteers. They hooked each person up to brain scanning technology, and then they had the group consider 36 projects from the crowdfunding website Kickstarter. The projects were all very similar in genre. They were all about documentary films. And each person had to take photos and descriptions of each Kickstarter campaign, and then they had to decide which project they would want to fund. To get an idea of what the volunteers thought of the potential of each project, each person had to rate how much they liked the projects and how likely they thought each one was to reach its funding goal. Then researchers analyzed the brain scans, and they discovered that the part of the brain associated with reward, which is called the nucleus acumen, lit up when the volunteers considered certain projects. And weirdly, those projects later went on to be successful. To really compare a person's ability to predict the future and her brain's ability to predict the future, researchers turned those brain scans into a virtual person of sorts. The team trained an algorithm to read the neural activity coming from those brain scans, and using that information, the algorithm was able to forecast successful Kickstarter campaigns with 59.1% accuracy, which is definitively better than just by chance. And as for the humans, well, they predicted funding outcomes with only a 52.9% accuracy, which is barely better than if they were doing it just by chance. And the researchers were frankly surprised by the results. They were so surprised that they did the study again with another set of 30 people, and the results were the same. The brain scans outpredicted their human counterparts. Researchers say the difference between predicting performances here is likely because when we make a decision, we're weighing all sorts of different factors. The nucleus acumens don't always steer the ship. Sometimes we're distracted, so we ignore or don't even register the positive reaction the reward part of our brain is having. But what's really cool is that when researchers took other parts of the brain into effect, the brain scans had an even higher accuracy rate of prediction. When the algorithm took into account not just the nucleus acumens, but the whole brain, it was able to predict Kickstarter outcomes with 67% accuracy. What this study allows researchers to do is not necessarily predict the future. After all, this study just looked at Kickstarter projects. But it does allow scientists to dissect the brain's decision-making process. And understanding how we make decisions could help predict the behaviors of whole populations, which means we could improve the accuracy of things like voting polls, for example. This week I learned that taking a photo does not actually take you out of the moment.
Hi, I'm Kim Kardashian West, and I'm going to give you a little tutorial on how to take the perfect selfie.
We are a world obsessed with taking photos. Did you know that by some estimates, people globally will take 1.3 trillion photos in 2017 alone?
And I just pose away and take about 300 photos until I get the perfect selfie.
But it seems like ever since we hit peak hashtag selfie, belfie, shelfie, welfie, or whatever, we've been told to rein it in, lest we sacrifice our best life and not live in that precious moment. A 2013 study from the journal Psychological Science found that taking photos did, in fact, impair memory. In the study, participants were led on a guided tour of an art museum, and they were directed to observe some objects and to photograph others. The next day, the people who took photos of the whole object remembered fewer details about that object. But interestingly, the people who chose to zero in on some detail that they were photographing, like if they were looking at the Mona Lisa and they took a photo of her smile rather than the whole painting, well, their subsequent recognition and memory detail wasn't impaired at all, which implies that having some focus or some engagement helped connect the photo with the memory. Now, 5 years later, the same journal, Psychological Science, has an update of sorts. Another group of researchers conducted a new but similar study. In this one, volunteers were also instructed to walk around a museum exhibit. The whole group listened to an audio guide while touring, and they were asked to either take photos freely of whatever they wanted or to leave their phones or cameras outside. Afterward, when the volunteers took a memory test, those who took the pictures had a better time recalling the objects they'd seen. But they did have trouble remembering the facts from the audio guide, so improved visual memory, but potentially impaired audio memory. In another experiment, the museum tour was entirely virtual, and people were given the option to take screenshots from their computers. And researchers found similar gains here. People who took screenshots had a better time conjuring mental images of the objects than those who did not take the screenshots. The interesting difference between the two studies was the addition of choice. And so when they decided to take a photo, they were engaging with the object similar to how volunteers from the 2013 study did when they chose to focus on a part of an object. And that process of looking around for what to photograph and engaging with it really helps you encode visual content and remember it. So there is one caveat, of course. According to the New York Times, the scientists say photography and memory lose their connection when social media comes into play. When the sole purpose is to post your photo to your followers, you're too busy making sure the lighting, the look, and the angle is perfect. All of this increases anxiety and takes the mind off the object itself. So if you really want to capture the moment for the moment's sake, not for all those likes, then you too can still live your best memoryful life. This week I learned that astronauts don't eat bread in space. Crumbs, it turns out, are a hazard of microgravity. Those little gluten morsels could float into an electrical panel and cause a fire, or they can harm an astronaut by flying into her eye or even causing her to choke. Astronauts actually know about this crumb issue from experience.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, 0. Ignition.
In 1965, during NASA's first two-man space mission, astronaut John Young smuggled a corned beef sandwich on board. And sure enough, when Young took it out of his pocket and took a bite, crumbs went everywhere. He quickly put it away, but those crumbs floated around for the rest of the trip. And the smell also wouldn't go away because there was no place for it to go. Nothing horrific happened, luckily, because of the sandwich stunt, but Young kind of did get in trouble. You see, one of the many things the astronauts were testing on their mission was the newly invented space food, which had been coated in gelatin to, you might be able to guess, prevent crumbling. When Congress got wind of the sandwich, some members were very angry that the astronauts were seemingly ignoring the food project they'd gone up to test. A hearing was held, but the congressmen were assured that the sandwich stunt would never happen again. And Young, for his part, continued to go up in space. Astronauts today use tortillas instead of bread, since they don't crumble as much.
And the tortillas that we use are heat-treated and specially packaged in an oxygen-free environment to prevent mold from growing. And thanks to that process, a tortilla like this can be good for 18 months.
But according to NPR, the fight for bread in space is not over. There is a team of German scientists trying to figure out how to one day get proper bread into space. Not by taking the bread up there, but by baking it up there. Now, of course, there are a whole host of technical challenges with such a feat. For one, preheating an oven is nearly impossible in space. Because if the door to the oven were to open while the oven was hot, a giant hot air bubble could leave the oven and just float menacingly around in the spacecraft, waiting for an unsuspecting astronaut to float by and burn herself. But still, this German company, which calls themselves Bake in Space, is not deterred. They've even gone so far as to suggest that astronauts could have fresh bread in space as soon as 2018.
Not too bad.
This week I learned about a poisonous snake whose venom is so powerful that it hasn't changed in 10 million years. You see, it's nature's way to evolve itself out of problems. The success of an organism, after all, is measured only by its ability to survive and reproduce. Take the cheetah and the gazelle, for example. Theirs is a classic predator and prey relationship. The cheetah is the fastest animal on Earth, able to reach speeds of up to 75 miles per hour. Gazelles have to be fast to survive. So, over time, these slower gazelles have died out and the faster gazelles have passed on their genes. But similarly, the cheetah needs to catch the gazelle to survive. So, slower cheetahs that miss their meal die off and the faster ones pass on their genes. So, each generation of cheetah and gazelle gets faster and faster. Another cool example of evolution is the spider that masks itself as an ant. Usually, spiders don't prey on ants because ants can swarm aggressively to defend against such predators. But this one type of jumping spider has evolved the ability to look and smell like an ant to fool the colony. And then he's sneaky about his kill. While the worker ants are away, the jumping spider will find a minor ant and just take the larva directly from it. That fellow minor ant just assumes it's passing off its kin to another ant worker. Meanwhile, the spider ant enjoys a light snack. But with the tiger snake, well, its venom is so good at killing that evolution has basically thrown in the towel. The key to the 10 million year old wonder venom is what it targets inside its prey. It goes after a clotting protein called prothrombin. This protein is absolutely crucial for survival. Animals then are under intense evolutionary pressure to keep this protein exactly the way it is. Basically, the tiger snake's prey dies if it evolves or it dies when it's attacked. Evolution, frankly, is taking its chance with the tiger snake run-ins. And because the prey isn't evolving, the tiger snake's venom hasn't had to either. What's interesting is that this is unique among venomous snakes. Research has shown that as snakes evolve into new species and specialize on new prey, the venom changes with it. But with the tiger snakes and their close relatives, the toxin in that venom are, you guessed it, still the same. Almost identical, in fact, to what it was all those many, many years ago. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned, you can go to theweek.com/podcasts, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainers series. And if you, dear listener, have come across any interesting facts this week that you want to share, you can email me at podcasts@theweek.com. That's P-O-D-C-A-S-T, both plural and singular. We'll get you there. Just put podcasts in the subject. Until next week, I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.